Dr. Nick Turkle is CEO of Aurora Healthcare. It's a major nonprofit with revenues of $5.3 billion a year. It employs 33,000 people, and he's just written, "The Time Is Now for Real Reform." Dr. Turkle, thank you so much for sitting down with Wisconsin Eye.
Steve, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
One of the things you say early is that healthcare is a right in America right now. Is that still being debated?
Well, I believe it's being debated. I might not be the right person to answer it, but I'll give you my perspective.
I think
we have what amounts to a partial right at this time. So we have laws like EMTALA that say if someone comes to an emergency room, we should treat them. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it is a bit unclear, and I think that's one of the things that makes this a difficult debate in this country.
Do you think most Americans maintain and believe that it's a right as opposed to some of their government leaders, sir?
I suspect that nobody's ever asked a large percent of the population that, but if we did, I'm guessing that many would say it's a right. It's such an important part of life for everyone that the access to healthcare and how we approach it is going to be fundamentally important in how this country does in the future.
You also say we spend enough in total as a nation on healthcare, 1/6 of the economy. So some of the changes that we'll get into later don't involve dramatically increasing our healthcare expenditures as a nation, sir?
That's correct. Maybe we spend too much. You know, many people would debate that. But I think the key factor is we don't spend those dollars in the right way right now to get the outcomes that people need.
As we speak, the U.S. Senate is debating basically several different options to repeal and replace. When you turn on CNN or something and watch the U.S. Senate debate, as a healthcare professional, as a leader in the healthcare field, what's your reaction to that debate?
Let me go back to the time of the ACA and come up till now and say that what has been missing from most of those debates is a deep understanding of what happens to patients. And that's the key premise and the reason for our discussion today. I think we need to put people right at the center of this discussion and say, how are they affected? What's going to happen as we enact these different policies? So my concern overall as I watch and try to influence the debate a bit would be to say that I think healthcare has become a bit of a political ping pong ball. And because there isn't a lot of bipartisan discussion going clear back 8 or 9 years, mm-hmm. we're now left with a topic that nobody wants to give on, but the real answers lie somewhere in the middle.
Help me understand, the ACA was unpopular, and now it's suddenly popular. Help me understand that evolution, please.
Sure. The ACA, probably like many things in our country, isn't all good or all bad, and I think people pick the elements that they choose to like or dislike. And I think in retrospect now, we look back and say, well, a lot of people got coverage. In Wisconsin, over 200,000 people
right.
are covered now. So,
and 20 million nationally, excuse me?
Yes, somewhere in that neighborhood. And,
thank you.
And in our state, that meant a 37% decline in uninsured rate. That's really significant. What didn't quite work was the affordability part and the estimates of who would take advantage of the ACA and who wouldn't. We've ended up with a higher risk population, therefore more expensive. So not quite working right. So I think people on both sides of the aisle would agree now that there are fundamental problems with the ACA, mm-hmm. and the question, of course, is what happens next?
Well, you've heard the politicians in Washington say the ACA, Obamacare, is failing. Is it, sir?
If you look objectively at Wisconsin, I don't think it's fair to say that it is failing. We have options available for people in every county, often multiple options. But we also see signs of things not going well, where insurers are withdrawing, and the affordability issue is getting worse. So it's not failing, it's not falling apart, but it is problematic. And it would lead someone in my field to say maybe we need a two-step approach to stabilize what's going on in the markets now, and then get a real bipartisan approach to what do we want to do with healthcare in this country long term.
Can you elaborate on step one and step two under your vision, sir?
Well, keep in mind, I'm not a policymaker and I'm not a politician. So you're hearing the opinion from someone who's a physician and a healthcare provider, but I do believe stabilizing is important for people who have obtained insurance, that we don't want to go back to a time when we have multiple uninsured people who wait too long to get healthcare, end up in the emergency room. It's just a bad, bad idea for everybody. So stabilizing those marketplaces with continued funding of the things that help people to gain insurance, I think that's important right now. So I would love to see that happen for a period of time until we could have a more permanent solution to healthcare in this country.
One of the bills that failed yesterday in the U.S. Senate would just repeal and put off any replacement for 2 years until the start of until January 2020. What would that do to Aurora, sir?
Our concern, as we think about where we're located, which is central city, suburbs, rural areas, our concern is always about coverage and access, that people really have the ability to get care. And what we worry about all the time with things like repeal would be, do we increase the number of uninsured? So some of the estimates from yesterday suggest that many people would become uninsured with repeal. So we would be very concerned about people, again, using the emergency room only as a healthcare site of last resort rather than seeking wellness and primary care. So it would have a negative impact. And every time we end up with a larger uninsured population, it affects employers in this state by ultimately increasing their cost of health insurance as well.
What difficult choices would the House passed version of the repeal imposed on Aurora?
The House version, if we look at how it has been assessed in terms of number of people uninsured, it's really the same story. And in both the Senate and the Republican version, the idea of scaling back Medicaid dramatically.
Yes, 700 is, to 800 billion over a period of years. Excuse me for
interrupting. That's okay. And unfortunately, in a state like Wisconsin, where we didn't fully expand, we partially expanded. We have now a number of people on Medicaid, but we didn't accept the federal dollars.
Yes.
In almost all these scenarios, Wisconsin is disproportionately hurt because we didn't expand and because we're now left in that kind of limbo. And by many estimates, we're affected more negatively with Medicaid cuts than any other state in the country. So, to me, this is a huge issue for the patients we take care of and for how we manage access to health care in coming years.
As a result of this debate over repeal and replace and the fact that the Senate can't pass anything yet, are we closer as a nation to a single-payer universal health care system, sir?
I don't know if we're closer. You know, the observers of health care in this country have said we're ultimately moving in that direction, and certainly now over 50% of how we're reimbursed is from government payers. But I have a strong belief, and talked about this in the paper, that it would be very helpful if employers continued to cover their employees in some fashion. And here's why I say that. Employers are really affected by the health and wellness of their employee population. So the more that they invest in wise ways in healthcare, they get a real return on that in terms of productivity in a healthy population. And I've seen such a change in the last decade in Wisconsin of employers investing in wellness, investing in programs to get a healthier population. I would hate to see that go away. And so my hope is that employer-based insurance remains, and ultimately I would love to see it incentivized in some good ways.
You say in your paper, we have the wrong incentives. We need to incentivize wellness and prevention and transition from our current model of sick care to health care. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Sure. The fundamental problem with American health care today has its roots way back in the 60s or even before, when the fee-for-service model became so popular. So being paid based on everything, every little thing that we do, really incentivizes more use rather than less. And it's been a trend with patients and with healthcare providers in this whole country. What I would love to see happen is incentives be based on how we take care of a population of people and how we demonstrate as a healthcare provider that we're providing better outcomes, so higher quality at a lower cost. Because ultimately, in any payment structure, government, private, or any other, if we can enhance quality and reduce cost, that's a good model for the people we take care of.
Now let's consider some of your specific recommendations. Your healthy focus idea, create a national pool subsidized with state and federal government funds. Would this be patterned after Wisconsin's old HRSA program, health insurance risk sharing pool?
Some of the concepts are similar, but the size and scope is very different.
National, you envision yeah. national.
Excuse yeah, me. I found high-risk pools to be almost a lightning rod like right now, like people like them very much or dislike them. And I think the history of high-risk pools has been so variable. Ours in Wisconsin worked well in some ways, but any high-risk pool that's going to be effective needs to take care of a large enough population so that we can actually affect the outcomes for that population, and it has to be funded appropriately. So my recommendation in this is that a combined approach to funding a high-risk pool that includes perhaps investments from government, from employers, and from individuals, we could have a very robust and appropriate high-risk pool. And the reason we know now this works, I mean, we know that taking care of high-risk populations in a more focused way gets a better outcome. Congestive heart failure would be a great example. Mm-hmm. People with congestive failure do better if we have a care coordinator who makes sure that they take their medicines, check their weights regularly, come to their appointments. We prevent hospitalizations and change the course of that disease and the quality of life for people. So if you think about populations like that, and we care for a large number of them, we'll be not only really efficient at it, will reduce cost, and it's better for the patient.
Your high risk pool, your healthy focus proposal, this would be everyone with pre-existing conditions from the youngest infant to the oldest among us, anyone with pre-existing conditions?
I would view it as those with pre-existing conditions or severe chronic diseases. So I'm in no way trying to force everyone into a pool. The idea is, if we know there's a better way to take care of a chronic disease population, whether it be adult, child, young, old, we should be using our resources more wisely to do that.
You say there is a proven the need for wraparound services, training in behavioral health, transportation, financial literacy, social services.
Yes.
Who should be providing those? Should that be part of the insurance coverage? Should it be part of a government? But who would pay for those?
Well, I personally believe that should be part of an insurance coverage, whether it be government insurance, state-based Medicaid-funded insurance, or private insurance. We know as providers that if we don't address things like behavioral health issues, we can't solve the physical problems. So as a healthcare system, Aurora has invested heavily in recent years in expanding our behavioral health capability, not only in traditional settings like our psychiatric hospital, but in places like emergency room and primary care, so we can meet those needs real time for patients. That's not something that we're reimbursed for well now. As we talk about caring for a population, that becomes something that we might be paid for globally, and we can then use the resources in a way that helps those people most effectively. But this is a huge problem in our country.
But is it a bigger problem in Wisconsin because of our obesity patterns and our fondness for cheese curds and beer and things like that?
We have a couple of unique things in Wisconsin, one of them being obesity, although that's gotten a little better compared to national rankings, but still relatively high rates of smoking, and certainly we have a major alcohol program. So when I think of behavioral health, it's not only the substance abuse problems, but all the mental health problems that affect virtually every family you know, things like depression and anxiety that affect people in all aspects of their life. So I'm looking at that whole package of services as behavioral health.
You would rename Medicaid Healthy Children and Young Adult Plans.
Yes.
They would offer care from birth to age 26 to those who are otherwise not covered by their parents' health plans, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Why would that be a good change, sir?
Medicaid has become a bit muddled in our country. And if you look now at where the funding goes, a little over half goes to elderly, nursing home, blind and disabled. And then a lot of the rest goes to cover children and a certain number of adults who don't have other coverage. The idea here would be, again, to focus on a population of people and say, let's focus Medicaid on children and young adults. Let's make sure we're immunizing, promoting wellness, teaching people how to be healthy, and cover people in the other categories through high-risk pool or what Medicare might evolve into. So it's again, about grouping a population and saying, we can do this really well.
And you also recommend a category of care called individual and group markets, basic minimal plans with the ability to upgrade for those aged 26 to 55. The ability to upgrade, does this mean someone could buy the so-called basic mandated services and then buy more? Can you elaborate?
Sure. So I have some beliefs about that that some agree with and some don't. But I believe wellness, immunization, behavioral health, preventive services ought to be a basic part of any plan. Mm-hmm. There are then opportunities perhaps to think of the way the marketplace works now with the various levels of plans and mimic something like that, so that people that want less out-of-pocket and more full coverage might pay a higher premium. But the idea, again, would be get that coverage, get coverage and access for people so we don't have a large grouping of people who are generally healthy going without health care until they run into a crisis.
You also say crossing state lines could encourage more development. With the correct balance in high-risk pools, risk would be moderated. What role would crossing state lines help?
Well, as we think about taking care of populations at Aurora, and we think about how many people come to us now from Illinois, from Northern Illinois, our patients don't really care if they cross the state line when they come for health care. They want really good care. So if you thought about the whole Milwaukee-Chicago area, yep, and the ability to care for populations across those state lines,
yes,
it might be a lot easier to have an insurer have a little bit less risk because they're taking care of a larger group. So if they're working with good providers who have the same philosophy that I've laid out about high quality and low cost, I think that a larger population just makes sense. Now, there are, of course, problems with crossing state lines and worries that there will be less coverage in some areas. Those are the kind of things that policymakers must address, because we don't want people without coverage. But I think we do want flexibility for companies to do the best they can.
Another recommendation, the Medicare would become healthy seniors, available to those age 55 for those without coverage, all seniors at 67, 2 years later than now.
Yes.
Talk about your vision for that, please.
I'm sure that would be controversial.
Yes, raising that.
So let me talk about 55 first. As we get into the last half of the decade of the 50s, people tend to begin to show signs of chronic disease or aging. So the concept here would be allow people to buy into Medicare starting then. I believe Medicare's a pretty good product, and particularly in places like Wisconsin. So allow people to buy in based on their means. Get them into a system earlier so that if they have early chronic disease, we can moderate the course of that and they move easily into Medicare. The 67 is an acknowledgement that if we begin to cover a larger number, some of those going down to 55 who can't afford as much, right, we probably need to go up a bit on the age. But I do think already, it's not as if Medicare is free right now. People pay quite a lot for it already.
Is this in response to the numbers that you and I have seen under the House passed plan? Someone who is 58 to 64, the potential premiums for health care would go up 3, 4, and 5 times.
Yes.
So if you let someone in at 55 to what you're calling the Healthy Seniors Program,
yes,
this would help fix that problem?
Exactly. So a state like Wisconsin, where 60% of the people who are currently on the exchange products, mm-hmm, are utilizing some of the government dollars to help offset the cost, we would have a large population of both underserved, poorer individuals, and more elderly people who would be disproportionately affected. This is one way to approach that in a way that would make a lot of sense with a system that we have in place. Medicare, by the way, in Wisconsin, we spend about $1,000 less per person than nationally, but we have better outcomes. So we're utilizing appropriately, taking really good care of our seniors, and we're doing it more cost effectively.
Your report mentions the Medicare Advantage programs. Do you believe they've generally worked, Doctor?
Our patients tell us that they are working. And as we think about people being in more managed care or HMO type of arrangements and then getting to Medicare age, they're much more comfortable with that than they were when the products were first introduced. So I think it's a natural evolution. But our experience with Medicare Advantage as a provider has been that it seems to work well for our patients. They like it.
I want to ask you about a phrase you use, because you alluded to how you operate hospitals in some of our poor cities, Racine and Milwaukee. You say the U.S. is shamefully behind, that's your term, in making healthcare available to minorities. Why?
When you think about the fee-for-service system, and you think about the fact that in very poor communities, if it's predominantly, for example, a Medicaid coverage or uninsured, hospitals are not able to make it. They simply can't function financially. As a healthcare system, we're able to moderate that because we're in a variety of communities. But in many places in this country, the sad fact is hospitals have closed, access goes away, so our truly underserved populations just don't have access. Even if they have coverage and we give them insurance, they don't have access to healthcare. And I think access isn't always hospitals. It may be clinics, freestanding emergency rooms, federally qualified health centers, but we've disincentivized that in this country, and we need to think about how we get that into those communities more effectively.
What are your thoughts on how your plans for change would address the opioid epidemic and addiction, sir?
Boy, that's a tall order. We're seeing dramatic changes in our emergency departments over the last several years with opioid overdoses. I think the governor has signed a number of bills that we've been very supportive of. We think that's great. We've done massive education with our healthcare providers about opioid prescribing, because we know that in the past that's been part of the problem, how many prescriptions are given out. Those things are important, the bills, the education. But fundamentally, we still have to have those behavioral health services to treat people with addictions and understand that that's a chronic disease too. It often doesn't work the first time or the second time or even the third time, but we need to keep at it.
There was talk in Washington. One of the options that the President Trump's administration could do is stop paying some of these subsidies to insurance companies that you rely on to pay for medical care. Do you think could that happen?
I hope not.
And if it did, if the Trump administration chose to help Obamacare fail by doing that, what would that mean for your organization, sir?
It's very much back to the beginning of the conversation we have. If people don't have adequate coverage or access, it's very hard for us to provide the right care for them, right time, right place. So we're concerned about what may happen not only in that respect, but in the president's proposed budget for next year, which has some fairly massive cuts that we don't think would be good for the people of Wisconsin.
If those cuts came to pass, and we're a long way from that because the budget has not been adopted, would Aurora have to dial back on its services?
We have taken a very clear approach that we understand we're in a tumultuous time in healthcare. We expect there are going to be many changes in the next decade. But what we say to our physicians, what our physicians say to our patients is, we are going to be here, and we will figure out the complexities of healthcare, and we're going to provide really good care to the people in our service area. But the reality is, if we're not paid, we can't do as much as we do now. And we do a lot of investment back into the community with our Better Together Fund and things like that. So there are always things at risk, but we will figure out the complexity the best we can. But it's part of why we're vocal about what happens. We believe very strongly that a bipartisan approach to health care has to happen right now. If you look at Medicare as a perhaps successful or more successful model in healthcare, that was a bipartisan effort. And we need to stop the back and forth between parties and say, what about the people who are being affected by this?
Has the ACA been good for your organization?
The ACA has been good for us because it's increased coverage. So it's allowed us to work with patients at an earlier level to address both chronic diseases, but also begin to address wellness. So getting regular care, always better. It has been good for us, and that's why we think stabilization right now would be important.
What are your thoughts on the role of insurance companies? The reason I ask is I heard on CNN, Senator Rand Paul said they made a profit of $16 billion in a year. Your thoughts on insurance companies?
Well, our approach has been that sometimes insurance companies are aligned with us in what we're trying to achieve, and sometimes they're not. And we're taking a very proactive approach and say we want to partner with insurance companies to drive to this better access, higher quality, lower cost. So when we find insurers that are willing to work with us, that's who we work with. It's easy to sort of paint the insurance industry badly. There are a lot of good people in that industry, and some of them are really looking for answers too.
In your white paper, you talk about Wisconsin as a potential laboratory for some of these changes. How could Wisconsin phase in and experiment with some of your proposed changes, sir?
Wisconsin could be a great place to test out some ideas, including things like a broader approach to a high-risk pool. We could do that here, and we could do it effectively, and I think we could demonstrate to the country that there are ways to cost-effectively take care of large populations. I think we've been something of a model in expanding Medicaid without accepting federal dollars. And while that's controversial, mm-hmm. it has provided more coverage. So let's take the various areas and let's make Wisconsin a place that shows the rest of the country how healthcare can work most effectively.
Just two more questions. Your worst case scenario as this nation debates healthcare, and then the following question, your best case scenario. Mm-hmm. So worst case scenario?
I think the worst case scenario is that it may be a very difficult time for patients and probably for healthcare providers. And that's not good for people. When patients are worried about their coverage, they get sicker and they make bad decisions. So I think worst case scenario is it's really bad for our population. Okay. Best case scenario is what's happened in recent weeks has made people understand that maybe a bipartisan approach to solving this problem would be good. I've actually heard the word now a few times, so I'm encouraged. And that's the best case scenario, because there are answers. There are many ways to approach this, but there are good answers, and we should go after them.
Then the final question, if you were giving the graduation speech, the graduates of the Medical College of Wisconsin, UW School of Medicine, next spring, what would you tell them about the future of their career choice?
I would tell them that they should have a lot of hope, because regardless of how healthcare evolves, their patients will depend heavily on them to get healthy and stay healthy, and that being in healthcare, it's really still a sacred profession, and we should view it that way.
And finally, if someone wants to read The Time Is Now for Real Reform, what website could they find it on?
They can find that on our Aurora website, and we're happy to have a lot of people read it.
Dr. Turkle, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.